Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with jazz trumpeter, vocalist, and composer Nate Berkey. He grew up in Colorado, then went on to the Berklee College of Music in Boston, spent some time at Seattle Pacific University, and at the University of California in Santa Barbara. That was all before he made his way to the American jazz mecca of New York City that is his home these days. During our interview, he discussed a wide array of topics and how he feels about being compared to legends like Miles Davis and the great Chet Baker. Dig this interview, my friends.
Thank you for taking a little time out to speak with me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for asking.
So I'm just going to dive right in here, and I just want to know, kind of in general, what has been going on jazz-related and music-related with you lately?
The biggest thing in the last year is I put out another album. I don't know if you heard of me. I don't know if you saw something in Downbeat recently.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So there was a review of my album in Downbeat. The album's called Just a Closer Walk. It's a collection of old hymns and spirituals that I've been tossing around the idea and, you know, in my head for several years of doing that for gospel themed album. And finally got around to doing it last year. We did it live and recorded it in a church out in California with my California band. I used to live in California, so I sort of have a California band, and I have a New York band.
Cool.
But, I did it with the California guys, and we did it in one day. Did it like real old school. We did it with, you know, one stereo mic in the middle of the church, and we kind of set up around it, and played. And I think it came out nice.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing it. You know, the one thing that I kind of want to piggyback off of that. I was talking to someone the other day, and we were talking about the recording process for jazz versus some other genres. Like, you'll hear the Stones go in the studio for months and belabor over a song for weeks and weeks. And I was explaining to a friend that heard my show about jazz, and I said, you know, Kind of Blue is the largest selling album of all time, and those guys banged it out in three sessions. And you're talking about one, and if you really kind of go through a lot of albums, people get in the studio and it takes a few days. That's always kind of blown my mind about jazz. Is that, how do you feel about the process? When you're in there, is there a different way you think that the studio's approached as far as from a jazz angle?
Well, I've done it a few different ways, but I always, I think the most important thing in jazz is just the communication that happens when you're playing and the interaction between the players. So you can't really record, I mean, you can, but ideally you have to all be playing at the same time in the same room and you know, feed off of each other's energy and ideas. So to record an album the way, like you said, the Stones, you know, spend, you know, everybody goes in individually and they lay down their part or whatever, you can't really do that in jazz if it's truly what I consider a jazz, you know, improvisational kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, I've recorded in the studio where, you know, we'll all play together and then maybe, you know, come back and overdub some things or redo vocal or do, you know, drop in a solo or something. I've done it that way, but I still feel like the purest way is just to have everybody playing and, you know, hit the record button and play.
Yeah.
Which is exactly right how we did the last one. I mean, we just went into the church and we, you know, kind of set up, got a good sound, and then we basically just started playing and did two or three takes of every song and took the best one of each. So, and that's the way they used to do it. That's the way Miles, you know, like you said, the Kind of Blue album was done that way. They did, you know, two or three takes, and usually it was the first one was the one that Miles always like to take the first take.
Yeah. Yep, that's what I've heard for sure.
Yeah.
So, speaking of first takes, let's go back to the beginning of your life. You grew up in Colorado, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And what was it about living in Colorado that gave you kind of a love for jazz? Was it your family? Was it the environment? Kind of talk to me a little bit about that.
My father played trumpet when he was in school, and he kind of introduced me to the trumpet when I was well, I started on piano, and then I picked up the trumpet around fifth grade. And my mom played piano, and my older sisters both played string instruments, and so there's music in the home quite a bit. And I gotta say, my dad had a record collection of Louis Armstrong, with one of the first trumpet players I listened to. And then my school, went to a public school in Evergreen, Colorado. And my high school band director was a guy by the name of Jim Stranahan, saxophone player, and loved jazz, primarily a jazz player. And he introduced me to, he introduced me to Miles for the first time. I mean, I'd heard of him, but he really, got me listening to him and a bunch of other people. And he encouraged me to go on and study music after high school. So, I look at both my parents and that one teacher as sort of the real strong musical influences in my life.
So when you were a kid, did you always want to get into music, or was there another dream that you had?
I had a lot of other ideas. My dad is an architect and an artist, and I thought about that. I love architecture and drawing, and so that was one idea I had. I also thought about becoming a pilot. I almost went into the Air Force. Yeah. I love to fly. So
yeah.
But music, I think around high school when I really started thinking about it, like, as something I wanted to do, as, possibly a career.
So moving on from high school, you go to school at Berklee College, Seattle Pacific mm-hmm. University, and then UC Santa Barbara. What did you learn about jazz, and more specifically about music, in that level of higher education?
Wow, quite a bit. And I kind of went through different phases in my higher education. Berklee, obviously, was strictly jazz, and so I learned a ton there, just about arranging, writing, improvising. I went to Seattle, and I got more into classical music there. I played in the orchestra. I took conducting. I took composition. And I also took some education classes there. And then when I moved to California at UCSD, that was really heavily composition and classical playing. Studied with a player from LA, LA Philharmonic, trumpet player, and kind of got my classical chops together there. I was still playing jazz, but and then studied with some great composers there as well. Learned a lot along the way.
without a doubt. So, you go to New York City in 2005. Was that a big culture shock to you when you arrived in New York City the first time?
Well, that wasn't the first time I'd been to New York. I mean, I'd visited a few times.
But as far as living and getting immersed in the culture and kind of being there.
Yeah, I went from living in beautiful Santa Barbara, California, which most beautiful places and kind of easy place to live.
Yeah.
To moving to New York, where, it's one of the tougher places to live, I think,
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a shock, just overwhelming the number of people and just how congested it is. And, there's really no escaping people here. I remember the first time I went into Fairway Market to go grocery shopping, I couldn't believe, I almost had to leave. It was so overwhelming, the number of people just trying to maneuver through this tiny little grocery store. But I'm never going back there again. Of course I did, and sort of got used to it and figured out how to make my way through. So, yeah, a lot of New York is sort of learning how to maneuver.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, did being there broaden your horizons musically in those first, months and years, was there a lot of, you know, pretty big growth for you?
Oh yeah, the quality of the players here. I mean, across the board, like, and so many. Like, when I first moved here, I tried to do whatever I could just to be playing. You know, do rehearsal bands, big bands, and whatever things that didn't, you know, really pay much, but just to be meeting players and hearing players. And I was just amazed at the level of musicianship here. And then, you know, I started, you know, piecing my quintet together. I was really lucky. This is the first rhythm section I played with when I moved here. Was Marco Morsenko on drums and Tony Marino on bass, who were both in Dave Liebman's quartet. And then Mark Soskin on piano, who's Sonny Rollins' piano player. So I'm really in pretty good company.
Yeah.
And then later I switched piano players to, now I play with Jim Riddle. And, you know, he's played with a lot of different people. But great piano player. Yeah, it's just, you know, and I've been fortunate enough to play with, you know, Phil Woods, like I said, Liebman. It's pretty amazing place.
Yeah. So you've obviously garnered enough of a reputation to earn comparisons to Miles Davis and Chet Baker. How do you feel about that?
I'm flattered. I mean, those are Miles is probably my biggest influence, and then kind of later on, I got more into Chet Baker, kind of more on from the singing side of it. But yeah, I don't mind the comparison at all. those are my two favorite players. So
it seems like your approach to music is to kind of mix up genres. Is that something you do intentionally? Is that kind of a subtext to what you do? Kind of talk to me about that philosophy.
Well, I don't know if it's even a philosophy or just kind of where I'm coming from musically. I feel like I've had a lot of, you know, like the gospel thing that came from growing up, going to church every, you know, two or three times a week and singing hymns. And so that's a big part of my musical upbringing. And then, you know, I love Latin music. I think maybe that came a little bit from living in California and being exposed to a lot of Latin jazz there and salsa and that kind of thing. Or maybe even listening to Herb Alpert when I was a kid. My dad had Herb Alpert records, so I think that was an early influence as well. And I love classical music. I love some country music. I mean, not all, but some. So there's a little bit of that in there. So I can't like easily define what my style is.
Well, let me ask you this. As a teacher, what do you try to teach your students?
A lot of things. I try to teach them to be passionate about what they're doing, love what they're doing, listen to a lot of music. You know, kids these days, they're not exposed to enough variety of music. So I get them listening to a lot of different things. I challenge them. I try to, you know, I don't look at music class as a free period or just a, you know, a fun, you know, kind of an easy class. I push them, I challenge them to play hard music. I work a lot with junior high kids and, you know, I have them doing, we're working on a Beethoven piece right now. We did a Mingus piece and did a Stravinsky piece. We're doing some Balkan brass band kind of music. And so I try to mix it up, do a lot of different things, expose them to a lot of different kinds of music. And hopefully they leave here with a greater appreciation for all kinds of music.
Absolutely. Who taught you the most about music?
I don't know. I guess I would, if I had to name one person, it would probably be my high school band teacher that I mentioned earlier. He exposed me to a lot of great jazz, but also a lot of great classical music. And that's, I mean, there's been so many so many teachers that I've had that have taught me different things. But I'd say if I had to, like I said, if I had to name one, it would be him.
Speaking of the number one, you mentioned how influential Miles Davis and Chet Baker was on you. If you could go back in time and meet any musician from any era, whether it's meet them and have a conversation or see them live, who would it be and why?
It wouldn't be Miles, and it wouldn't be Chet, because I've heard them live, but I probably would like to meet Miles, but I've heard he was kind of could be difficult, and
yeah.
So going way back, J.S. Bach, I think, is like the most brilliant musician I've ever heard. I mean, his writing. I kind of like to know where that came from.
Yeah, sure.
Stravinsky as well.
Jazz
players, other players. I probably like want to hang with Clifford Brown. He seemed like a really great guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And life cut short, way too young.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what he would have sounded like if he had lived to be 50 or so.
Yeah.
Such a monster player at 25.
So, what's the greatest thing for you about waking up every day?
Coffee.
There you go.
I look forward to. I mean, like I said, I'm working a lot with kids these days. I look forward to what I can do for them each day. And I look forward to playing every day, and it's a possibility that every day brings.
Yeah. What's next for you? What the proverbial, a year from now, five? What are you looking for in your career to really establish yourself in your creative process and what you want to accomplish?
Well, I mean, in the near future, I have some European tours coming up, and going to Russia in a couple of weeks. So I'm really excited about that. I think. One goal is just to travel more. Mm-hmm. I have this, kind of a full-time teaching job. So, but I still have my summers off and several weeks. I don't feel like I have to be the grind of trying to play every night of the week now, because I did that for a long time. Now I feel like I can be a little more selective in the gigs that I do and the places that I play, which is a nice change, and I can. Like I said, have time off in the summer to tour and kind of go places where I want to go and not be so stressed about making enough money to pay the rent.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I want to do my next album. I'm not sure what it's going to be or where I'm going to do it, but I have a lot of ideas about that. So I want to keep recording. I want to keep touring, and I want to keep teaching. I really do. I love teaching.
So let me ask you this. Your bio basically says that you're quiet but intense, demeanor typifies an artistic relentlessness pursuing the evolution of your own musical personality. I want you to tell me, in basically the length of a tweet, who are you? What is you? How would you define yourself?
Let's see. How would I define myself in a tweet? I'm an artist. I mean, not strictly a musician. I'm an artist, and I appreciate beauty. I want to bring more beauty into the world through my music. And I guess relentlessly pursuing that. It's sort of almost a purification, like trying to cut out all the unnecessary stuff. I feel like my style and my persona is actually becoming simpler, more purified. I don't know if that's really answers
that's it.
The question.
That's perfect. I always like to have that definition. Hey, Nate, thank you for your time. Continued success. Enjoy Europe.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to yet another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in New York City, Kansas City, and spots all over America giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Nate Berkey for his time in jazz. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino on the iTunes Store, or you can always visit theneonjazz.blogspot.com for all things Neon Jazz. Until next time, enjoy the music, my friends.
Neon Jazz.